Before we jump into today's episode, we wanted to take just a minute to share something that's important to us. Angels Among Us is an interfaith podcast. While many of our guests come from a Latter-day Saint background and may occasionally reference beliefs, experiences, or teachings that are specific to their faith, our hope is that this never becomes a barrier to anyone listening. Our mission has never been to convince anyone what to believe. Our mission is to help people feel seen, loved, and less alone. No matter your faith tradition, or even if you're still searching for what you believe, we want you to know that you are welcome here. We believe that God loves all of His children, and we believe that each of us is surrounded by help, both seen and unseen.
As you listen, you may hear perspectives or beliefs that differ from your own. If that happens, we hope you'll listen for the heart behind the message. We've been blessed to learn from people of many different faiths, backgrounds, and life experiences, and we've found that there is so much we can learn when we're willing to listen to one another's stories. One of our favorite things about this podcast is discovering that despite our differences, we often have much more in common than we realize. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being willing to learn, grow, and listen alongside of us. Now, please enjoy the show.
I can testify that I was being carried because there is no way that I could have had that kind of peace and have been able to do the things that I had to do. I had to get a funeral ready. I had to prepare things that, you know, most mothers shouldn't have to do. They shouldn't have to go through it. And as soon as I gave birth, he was early, but I gave birth and he was alive. And as soon as Fonzie cut the cord, that's when he passed away.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. Brent and Michaela here as your hosts. I wonder if you guys ever get sick of me saying that all the time. I always wonder, maybe there's new people listening and they don't know our names. So, Brent and Michaela here, and we are joined by Fonzie and Heather Haskell. If you recognize the last name Haskell, it's because it'll be a couple months ago, you just listened to Jason Haskell, who's Fonzie's brother, talk about their father's role in the Cokeville Miracle. And here's your reminder, if you haven't seen that movie yet or listened to those episodes, go do it. It'll change your life. But yeah, we are honored and thrilled to have both Fonzie and Heather with us. So we'll go ahead and turn it over to you guys. Go ahead and give a brief introduction and go ahead and get going on your story.
Thank you. Yeah, Jason is actually the one that gave me the name Fonzie. That's not my birth name. It's a nickname that I've had since birth. He and I are almost 8 years apart, and our parents had 8 miscarriages in between him and I. My dad was married before. He was married to my mom and had 5 kids, but they lived with their mother most of the time. So Jason, when he was at home alone and wanting a younger sibling pretty bad, and after 8 miscarriages, they found out I was going to make it, and my parents said, "All right, it's your baby. You can name him." I'm named Carlisle DeVoe after my great grandfather, but Jason said, "Well, if it's a boy, it'll be the Fonz, and it'll be cool. If it's a girl, it'll be a nerd, and we'll give it to Grandma because Grandma had 6 rotten boys and no girls." I guess thankfully I wasn't a girl, but it stuck. So, yeah, he's the one that's responsible for my name, and I it's also that. Easier to spell than Carlisle too. So I go by.
I love that.
But yeah, we're Fonzie and Heather. We live in Wyoming, live and work on a ranch. We're parents. We've been married for almost 23 years. Kind of neat, our meeting. I was born and raised in Southwest Wyoming in the thriving metropolis of Rock Springs. And after high school, came to Northeast Wyoming to work on a ranch and with some friends that I met in high school as a result of rodeo. And she is from Pennsylvania originally, from York, Pennsylvania. Tell a little bit about how you got here.
I was on vacation out west, and to make the long story short, on the way home, I had that small, still voice say, you need to move out west here. You need to move here. And that was the furthest thing from my mind. And eventually I sold my house and moved out to Rosette, population 25. And we met at a bar I was working, and he's a cowboy and would come in and eat for lunch and play cards at night. And that's kind of how I moved in a snowstorm in February, March. That year, Easter was the end of March, and we went on our first date. He took me on a horseback ride. Yeah.
Sounds like a Hallmark movie.
Yeah. I wish it was that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's how we met. It's kind of interesting thinking back on that. You know, the circumstances of that meeting, had anything, you know, gone different, you know, it would have, the circumstances would have been changed and we probably wouldn't have met. You know, I was born and raised in the church. I'm a member, or we're both currently members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, but I was born and raised in the church, but in my latter teen years became inactive and, fell away from the church and all that comes with that, the partying and fast living and crazy stuff. And like she said, she started working at, it was a Rosette Bar and Cafe, and in the wintertime we'd get, finish up our work for the day and go down there and eat lunch and then just hang out. And so she got to tell that story of our meeting shortly after she joined the church at a state conference where a general authority was presiding, and that general authority happened to be then Elder Russell M. Nelson.
That's a whole story in itself. One of my most embarrassing moments of my life. I was new to the church and I had never even prayed in front of anybody. I didn't know what a state conference was. I really didn't know what a general authority was. And this guy was sitting beside me and I asked him if he was nervous, and it was, yeah, Elder Nelson.
Well, for those of you that don't know what a general authority is, it's...
Well, like the apostles, the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, it's the same as Jesus Christ's New Testament church, right? And he had apostles that were special witnesses of him, of Jesus Christ. And that's what our apostles today do. They testify and they are special witnesses of Christ. And... you know, the circumstances of their personal witness is different amongst all of them, but they do have, I will testify, having met some of them in person, that they do have a special witness and conviction of Christ, of who he is. So, yeah, I mean, pretty big deal to be able to meet one, but also to sit next to one and ask if he was nervous. Yeah. That was funny. Yeah. That is a whole separate story that could take an hour, and it was awesome experience. But yeah, anyways, going back. So that was the circumstances of our meeting. And, we started dating and then, decided to get married, and we're married the following year. Shortly after getting married, she started having some questions about the church, and because it was foreign to her, although she is a descendant of the Whitmers, that are witnesses of the Book of Mormon, but she grew up on the banks of the Susquehanna River, so a lot of lot of things there that in common, but she had questions about the church. So invited the missionaries over and started having discussions. And then they would ask me, she'd have questions for them and they'd ask me the answer. I was like, I don't know. I should know, but I don't. So that prompted me to go back, start going back to church. And I started attending our little branch here in Moorcroft. And the second I walked in there, I didn't know a soul there, but I felt like I was at home. And I was welcomed by two individuals. One, he doesn't live here anymore. They've just since moved, but the other guy is currently serving as our branch president, but they were the first two people to welcome me and have been good friends ever since. And it didn't take long after me attending church there that they started to ask, you know, about my family situation and about her. And, you know, a lot of the sisters there just started welcoming her and being her friend. And still to this day, some of her best friends are ones that she, you know, that we met there. Yeah, eventually, so we were married in 2003, August 2003. Was it January or February, I think, of 2005 that you had a tubal pregnancy?
Well, back up. Okay. We got married in August, and then we wanted to have a family. We started trying in December.
Right.
And a year later, I was 30. We still didn't have any kids. We started on fertility drugs, and within, a couple of months, was it a couple of months?
Yeah, just a few months,
I had an ectopic pregnancy. And so finding out you were pregnant and then finding out it was ectopic, I was still able to keep my fallopian tubes and all that, nothing. The surgery was a success, so they said you would still be able to have kids. And then it took.
It was that following fall.
October.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of funny little inside joke here. So also in working on the ranch, I manage an outfitting business, a hunting outfitting, big game hunting outfitting business. But at the time I was a guide and hunting season is September and October, right? I'm gone guiding hunters, but she is pregnant. So I was on the clock, double duty. I was at the hunting lodge, guiding hunters all day, and then sneaking home at night and back hunting camp.
But one of our kids, we had four biological children, and all but one were conceived in October when he was at hunting camp.
That's where this Chrome curse comes from. Lots of miles. Anyways, but
so
yeah.
we were able to conceive, and that was our first biological son. And then
He was born in June of, so he'll be June of 2006. So he'll be 20 next week.
And then we got pregnant again. Was it a year and a half? A year and a half later, because they were supposed to be exactly 2 years apart.
Right.
So 20 week appointment, you go in, you're supposed to, you know, have your big ultrasound and, the doctor that I had at the time, he was really old. Like he was on his way out. He was on his way to retirement. And he was like, something's wrong, but I can't figure out what it is. So he sent us to a neonatologist in Denver. And after, I don't know how long it was, you could tell something was wrong. One doctor called in another doctor. They called in another doctor. And I finally said, just tell me. I'm okay if you just tell me, but not knowing is, you know, making this worse. So basically they said that our child had something called Potter syndrome. And they didn't know if I would be able to carry to term, but they knew after the birth, he or she wouldn't make it at that time. But they couldn't tell me how long after birth. They didn't know anything about it. It was such a...
Pretty rare.
Eventually, we found out it's actually a genetic disorder. So at that time, I wasn't attending church, any church. And as I walked out of that clinic, I felt like someone had lifted a boulder off my shoulders. And even though I just got the worst, most devastating news of my life, I felt at peace. And I'm not one to have peace. That's not my general
nature.
Yeah, that's not my general nature. And so we went to dinner and I was living my life, you know, just like normal. I'm now prepared. I'm a type A personality. So now that I knew I needed to plan a funeral. I knew I needed to get things in order. And I had, at the time, my stepmom, who was an angel. Yes. She was an angel. She met my dad when they were in their 50s. She had no children of her own. She had never been married. And so my brother and I became her children. And she loved us and our kids as if she gave birth to us. So she kept saying, she put us on so many prayer chains. And she said, when two or three agree, you know, it has to be. And everybody, we were on temple prayer rolls. And I never once prayed for a miracle because I felt when I walked out of that clinic, I just knew. I knew that this was what was going to happen and I was at peace with it. And it wasn't until years later that Fonzie and I were having a conversation and I realized that he didn't think I had the faith and he didn't know that I had received a peace at that point. When we had found out the diagnosis, I was at peace at that point and I was okay because I knew that that was what was meant to be. I mean, I was still sad. I cried all the time and I ate a lot and gained a bunch of weight.
Me too, because when she was craving milkshakes and spinach and artichoke dip from Applebee's, I
dope.
Couldn't
dip
that too. It was kind of like dope. I couldn't just go get her some. I had to, there was some pregnancy sympathy food on my behalf as well. So, yeah. Yeah. It was, if you're not familiar with what Potter syndrome is, it's the kidneys don't develop in the baby in utero. And kidneys are what creates amniotic fluid. Amniotic fluid helps the lungs to develop. So essentially, the baby's born with underdeveloped or undeveloped lungs and essentially they suffocate, kind of sucks. It really does suck. But yeah, when we came out of the clinic and you know, I didn't recognize that she had that experience of peace. I just chalked it up as she just lacks faith. So I've got to have the faith necessary for both of us in order for this to come out for the best. But, you know, I was just in my own way. She was in too, and I wasn't.
And my whole life, I've always been drawn to the poem Footprints in the Sand. And I can look back in times like that, I can testify that I was being carried because there is no way that I could have had that kind of peace and have been able to do the things that I had to do. I had to get a funeral ready. I had to prepare things that, you know, most mothers shouldn't have to do. They shouldn't have to go through it. And as soon as I gave birth, he was early, but I gave birth and he was alive. And as soon as Fonzie cut the cord, that's when he passed away. So that is one time that I know. And that was before I started actively attending church. I was baptized in two different churches, one as an infant and then one as a teenager. And so I am very familiar. I was raised in a church. In different churches. So I had the faith. I knew about Christ. And that was one of, you know, the big things in my life that I can look back and I know that God was carrying me. I knew it without a doubt. I can testify to that.
I remember that when he was born, and she might not remember this. Maybe she does. But as soon as he was born, she said, "Give him a name and a blessing." And I said, "What name?" She said, "Carlisle DeVoe Haskell Jr." And I did. I gave him a name and a blessing. And I know that the heavens were opened. There was a light shone in there that wasn't there before. And the nurses reached out to her afterwards and said that they'd never experienced anything like that before. They testified to that being a heavenly experience. And it was shortly after the cord was cut, he tried to gasp and take a breath and was unsuccessful. And I watched the color leave his body. I got to hold him. She didn't. She's still in the process of, you know, everything that takes place with birthing. But I got to hold him. I'm jealous because she got to have more time with him growing and developing in her body, what little he did develop. But I know that the time that I got to have with him was, I cherish it. I think of it. There was a time that I did think of it daily. It's not daily, but it's often that I think about his face and seeing him and just that experience. But I do know that there were heavenly hosts present that escorted his spirit back through the veil. And it was a pretty awesome experience to be a part of, even if it was, you know, not getting to take my son home. I know that we'll get to be with him again. And I long for that day. I'm jealous. I'm jealous of grandma, her stepmom, and her dad, and now my dad, because they're there. And I'm sure if he's my kid, they're probably doing a lot of damage control in heaven. But yeah, that was an experience that certainly drew us closer together as husband and wife, because there was some times prior to that that were pretty rocky for us. But you know, that's just one of many. So after that experience, there seemed to be just kind of a void in our family, something missing. And it was, so that would have been April 2008. And then shortly, when did you get pregnant with Cayenne? Probably
March,
like,
of the following year.
Yeah, so March of February, the following March. Year, got pregnant with our daughter, Cayenne. And she was born in November. Her and Jason are actually birthday buddies. They share the same birthday, which is pretty cool. And then our youngest, the caboose, Kyson, he was born in June of 11?
Yeah. I have a thought I want to talk about. So after our baby Carlisle passed away, I had a dream of a field, a baseball field, full of boys. So when I got pregnant the next time, in my type A personality and the stenographer, not stenographer, the sonographer, whatever, the tech that does the ultrasound, she was like, do you want to know what it is? And before that, we didn't want to find out, but this time I did. And I said, you don't need to tell me. I already know. I had a dream that it was a boy, so I know it's going to be a boy. And she was like, well, actually, it's a girl. And I thought, how weird, because this dream was so real. So fast forward to after the birth of our last son, I had to have a hysterectomy, no more kids. And I was told that I would have more kids. And I thought, how horrible. Why would you say something like that? I'm very closed-minded. I never even thought about the possibility of adoption or anything. I just thought, why would you tell me that, knowing I wanted more kids, but had to get a hysterectomy? And long story short, we met some people that introduced us to a program that hosted kids from Ukraine and
kids in orphanages.
Yeah. Was it 6 or 7 years ago now?
That would have been the winter of 17 and 18.
So basically we got a call on a Sunday. Would you want to host a little boy from Ukraine? And we picked him up Wednesday from the airport. He didn't speak English. And we ended up adopting him and his two brothers. And I can tell you that the adoption cost more than we made in a year at that point. I was a stay-at-home mom. And we talk about angels on earth. Our community rallied behind us. They had an auction for us. People donated money. We were able to raise almost to the penny what we needed for the adoption. And Yeah, it was just amazing. There are so many instances, like we talked earlier, we could go on for hours about stories and things and testimony that we have of people coming through. And it's a God thing. I tell everybody, they said, how did this happen? Or how does this happen? I said, it's a God thing. You know, we're kind of skipping around, but he waited 7 years for me to join the church. And, I was walking through our hallway and my oldest biological son at that time was 2 years old. And I got a very bold thought. This voice actually said, take your son to church. And he had been asking if he could go to church with his dad. And I was like, nope, no, you know, you're not going to go to church. And I told my best friend at that time. And was it a year later? 2 years later, it happened again.
Yeah.
And she said, well, don't you remember? You were told that before. And I said, I don't remember that. And she said, well, you were. And I think that was when I said, okay, I'm going to start going to church. He was teaching a class, and so I took my son. But again, prayers. His family was praying. He was praying for 7 years. And it took I don't know how many sets of missionaries to come teach and explain the gospel and answer my questions. And, you know, that was another awe-inspiring thing where I would have questions. And these are 18, 19-year-old boys that they haven't read the scriptures. And God would show them where to go in the scriptures. And they were honest with me. I don't know. I didn't know the answer. And I opened the scriptures and God showed me the answer to your question.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we adopted three brothers, from Ukraine. We got them home in November of 2019. At the time, they were what? 15, 13, and 9, I think, or 9 or 10, or I can't remember. Right now, they are what? 21, almost 22.
At the end of this year, they will be 22, 20, 20, 17, 17, and 15.
All of ours.
So we're considering starting drinking again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that tested a lot of things. Patience and bringing, you know, boys, trauma boys into our home. And yeah, them melding into our family. And, you know, it's that story in and of itself is I think probably a whole nother episode or two, because of just like she said, the things that have lined up and too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence. But, you know, there was a missionary serving after they came to our family. There was a missionary serving from Jason's home ward that was called to the Kyiv, Ukraine mission. And this was in 2020 or 2021. And because of Zoom, they could learn the gospel in their native language of Ukrainian. So we would Zoom with missionaries there and have missionaries in here and have this conversation, and they could be taught in their native language. I mean, too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence. You know, pretty cool. So yeah, that's been a whole whirlwind of fun.
Fast forward to your accident.
Okay. So, one of the many lives that I've used up, almost 3 years ago, working on the ranch, we were gathering some cattle, and I was on an ATV, and we'd been fighting these things for hours, that particular morning gathering them. And, let me back up 2 days, 'cause this is relevant. So part of working on the ranch, they also own a rodeo company. So bucking horses and bucking bulls. And I was at a rodeo loading some horses to get ready to buck them. And as I'm bringing a gate closed, a horse turned around and runs into the gate, crashes into my knee. I felt something pop. I was like, oh, that's no good. And I knew there was something wrong. Well, he's now in our stake presidency. I think he was in a bishopric at the time, but he's a orthopedic surgeon. And I'd reached out to him, said, hey, I did something to my knee. Can I, you know, come into your office and get checked out. And he said, yeah, I'll have my nurse call you on Monday. So that happened on Saturday. 2 days later on Monday, we're gathering these cattle. I told my boss, I said, I can come help you gather these cattle in the morning, but as soon as we're done, I need to run into town to get my knee checked out. He's like, all right, perfect. So we'd been gathering these cattle for several hours, and they're cows that raise bucking bulls. So they're not the nicest to be around and most agreeable. And they kept trying to cut back and cut back. And finally, we were almost to the corrals with them. And this one cow cuts back, and she'd been cutting back several times that day. And there was a few guys on horseback, and their horses were tired and played out from chasing these goofballs for so long. And the one guy was going to head her off, and I thought, well, I'll just hurry and get to the gate and beat her to the gate. And I was getting ready to go by him, and I'm coming up from behind him. And it's kind of an unwritten code that you don't ever ride between another guy and livestock that they're gathering. You go around them. Well, between him, on the offside of him, on the offside of the cattle of him, was a fence and some brush, and it was pretty rough, but it was pretty smooth going if I would have went between him and the cattle. And so I was coming up behind him, and I hollered up, said, hey, I'm coming by you. And he looked over his shoulder at me, and he went to step his horse over, move it to the left so I could go around the right side of him. And it was just kind of a misunderstanding, miscommunication, but I was going to go around his left side. So as he's moving his horse over and I'm turning, his horse just stops and turns broadside right in front of me, and I'm about to T-bone him. And I was driving, I don't know, 25, 30 miles an hour. And so I remember hollering, saying, oh, no, I slammed on the brakes and swerved because I knew I didn't want to hit him. That would have been bad for all of us. And it's kind of interesting how in those moments, time just slows down, because I remember it just was in slow motion. I was able to slam on the brakes and swerve to the left and miss him. And just as I got by him, my front right tire caught kind of a rut that horses had used to walk up to the corral to, you know, go to water. But my tire caught that, and next thing I know is I'm getting thrown off of my four-wheeler, and I lead with my head to protect the rest of me. Landed on my head, knocked me out. And next thing I know, I'm waking up, and all the guys around me are waking me up. You're saying, hey, you're in bad wreck. There's some blood. Just kind of take your time. And I was in a lot of pain. I hurt. My back hurt really bad. Well, what had happened is when I fell off and hit my head, got knocked out, my four-wheeler, they said it flipped in the air behind me, went up about 10 feet and came down right on top of me, landed right on top of me. And the guy that was on the horse, he said, I was pretty sure I just watched you die. He said, they got the four-wheeler off of me, and he looked at me and he said, my head was kind of folded back over my shoulder and I was purple. And he said he had to turn and walk away. He said, I just knew you were dead. I felt sorry for your wife and your kids. And he said he was trying to catch his breath and gain his composure. And one of the other guys, Matt, who's one of my best friends, and I've worked with him and for him for almost 28 years now. He said, oh, he just took a breath. And Justin was the guy on the horse. He's like, whoo, thank goodness. And so they said it took a little while for me to gain consciousness. But once I did, you know, I kind of came to and was just kind of slowly getting my wits about me. And I remember my back hurting so bad, and it hurt really bad to breathe, and my shoulder hurt. And eventually I was kind of able to get up on my hands and my knees. And one of the other guys I worked with, he had just left physical therapy because about a month and a half before he wrecked a four-wheeler too. And he was going to physical therapy. Yeah, it wasn't a good year for four-wheelers on the ranch. But anyways, he just come from physical therapy and drove his pickup out to where I was. And somebody had gone to that house. We were less than a mile away from the house. Somebody had gone to the house, called 911. And he drove out there. I said, well, let me get up and see if I can catch my breath. I was kind of trying to get some words out. And I went to stand up on my right knee. Well, that was the one that hurt from the horse the 2 days before, and I said, "Oh, wait, let me stand up with this other knee first." And they were trying to lift me, and my shoulder hurt because I'd separated. Later, found out separated my AC joint. So they're trying to pick me up, and that hurt really bad. And I just kind of was telling them how to help me stand up. And Justin, the guy on the horse, says, "Well, once you started telling us what to do to help you, I knew you were going to be okay." So anyways, eventually got into Tyler's pickup, and he was driving me to the house to meet the ambulance because there was some mud and stuff out where I was. They didn't think the ambulance could get out there without getting stuck. So he got me in the pickup, and I reclined the seat and driving to the house, and he's taking it easy. But I mean, I felt every little bump because I had a broken rib in my back, and holy smokes, that hurt so bad. And I'm moaning and groaning and grunting. And I remember he stuck his hand on my arm. He's a man of faith, not of our faith, but a man of great faith, and put his hand on my arm and said a prayer for me, but also for my family, for my wife and kids, and that everything would be okay. And then we got to the house and waited for the ambulance to arrive. The first responder on scene was a deputy sheriff that I know and have known him for several years, and he's actually a member of our church. He's not active, he's a convert, but he's a member and received the Aaronic priesthood. So there's some things that kind of get set into order here. What are the keys of the Aaronic priesthood? The keys of ministering angels, right? A man with authority arrived that had priesthood authority for the ministering of angels. What does that mean? I don't know, because I had paramedics there that gave me fentanyl, so I didn't feel anything. That was an angel. But others said that they were comforted in that time. She was getting mixed messages. Hey, they're going to take me to Gillette. Nope, they're going to life flight me to Rapid City. No, they're going to take me to Gillette. And finally, she was able, after 45 minutes or so after the wreck, she was able to come out and see me in the ambulance. Tyler is the guy that drove me up to meet the ambulance. And he gave her a hug and comforted her. So I'm waiting for the helicopter to arrive. And it does. They load me on it, fly me to Rapid City. And do you remember? I know. So in Gillette, at the hospital, there were some guys waiting that are pharmacists, but they're members of the church, members of our faith, and they hold the Melchizedek priesthood. They were there ready, prepared to minister to me and give me a blessing. But I didn't go there. So they found out I was going to Rapid City. Our stake president reached out to the stake president in Rapid, and he said, "Yep, we have guys there at the hospital that, you know, can give him a blessing." And that had been relayed back to her. And once they kind of got me in and did the acute trauma care, the guy that's now serving as our branch president, Clinton, the guy that met me and welcomed me when I first started going back to church, he and his son-in-law happened to be in Rapid City that day, and she'd found out. And she said, "Will you come give him a blessing?" And they said, "Yep, we'll be right there." So when I arrived, there were people in place ready to give me a blessing if need be, but she said, "Nope, this other guy's coming, him and his son, they're going to give me a blessing." All right, perfect. So they get me through the ER and checking me out, they gave me ketamine, and I don't remember much, but I do remember one thing, that while I was waiting to get an MRI, I could see myself laying on that bed and covered with a white sheet up to my head. I wasn't totally covered like I was dead or something, but I was covered with this white sheet, and I could see myself. And then I heard a voice. And it was a familiar voice, and it called me by name. And he said, "I'm not ready for you yet, for I have a work for you to do." And I felt an increase capacity to love at that moment. I felt a love like I'd never felt before, but I felt the ability and capacity to love others like I had never felt before. And I know I was on ketamine, but I know what I know. And I know what I heard, and I know what I felt. And I can't deny it. After that, after I got checked into my room, my friend Clinton and his son-in-law came and gave me a priesthood blessing. And he said the same thing. He said, the Lord is not ready for you yet, for he has a work for you to do. I don't know what that is yet, but and it kind of scares me, to be honest. But, you know, who would think that such a tragic event like that, an accident, and could lead to that? I'm thankful for that accident. It was extremely inconvenient. Ended up being pretty busted up, but not needing any surgeries. I needed a surgery on my knee, but that was not related to this other incident. Ended up fracturing 6 vertebrae. I think 1 in my neck, 5 in my back, a broken rib, separated AC joint, partially torn bicep tendon, partially torn rotator cuff, and I didn't need surgery from any of that stuff. I was in a brace and sat around the house for 3 months in a brace and was able to heal up. That in my opinion, it, in and of itself, is a miracle. Talking to the doctors after the fact and them looking at my all of my images, they said, you know, I don't know how you don't have any paralysis from one of these fractures, let alone all of them. It's like, I don't know. I lost the feeling in the tip of my index finger for a few weeks, and that was about it. Tip of my index finger was numb, but other than that, nothing. So yeah, that was absolutely a miracle. And I know that there were angels present there to, I think, comfort others, because I don't remember it. I've had a dream or two about it afterwards, and you know, can see myself flying through the air, my four-wheeler flipping and landing on me. Is that just my imagination? I don't know. Is that, you know, a replay of the events? I don't know, but it was chaotic and hectic. And you know, for those other guys to have to see that and experience it probably wasn't fun, but you know, I got to hear the voice of the Lord afterwards, and so it was worth it to me.
After gaining a testimony, I no longer believe in coincidences, and I had to be in the hospital with him for a very long time. I can't even remember how long it was.
I was in Rapid City for 9 days, and then Sturgis one day, and then home after that.
Yeah, to us, that's a long time, because we still had how many kids living here? 5?
That's the miracle. Yeah. We had 5 kids at home, and they didn't burn the house down or kill each other or anything like that. That's the miracle.
Yeah, everything was taken care of. People brought meals. I had a peace about me. Again, another time where I was comforted and had peace that there is no way that I would have had that without the spirit. My car was broken down at the time. And 2 of my boys were able to, one didn't speak English that well. So they were able together, but he was also working at a mechanic shop. I sent them a YouTube link, what I thought was wrong with my car at the time. Together, they were able to figure it out, go to town, get the part, fix the car, and bring it down 2 hours away to bring it to me. And there were just so many things that fell into place, and everybody was taken care of. There were no emergencies with 5 kids still at home and sports and all different things. It just was taken care of. So just another testimony to me. While he was in the hospital, I know this is an interfaith podcast. Members of the Church of Jesus Christ can, if they choose to, wear garments. And of course, he was in a hospital gown, and he asked me if I would help him put on his garments. He's got broken everything from the top of his neck to the bottom of his sacrum, and it was hard for him to move. And I was doing a lot of the things for him, moving him, getting him up, getting him to the bathroom, bathing him. And I know how much it hurt him. So he asked me if I would put on his garments, and I said no. And eventually he wore me down.
Put them on me, not on him.
Yeah. Me put them on, hurt him. So he was covered in bruises, and some of them were huge. They were deep, dark purple bruises. You know how long it takes for a bruise to go away. At least a week. And they looked like blood clots. They were so bad. And so I was able to get his garments on him. And within 24 hours, I could see the bruising disappear. His body was healing. And we attribute it to the garments, because that wouldn't have happened otherwise. And his faith and just wanting to wear those garments, and what, because what they symbolized for him, just was another God thing. I wouldn't have believed it if I wouldn't have seen it with my own eyes.
Wow. That in itself, holy moly. That's pretty cool. I think that it's pretty cool to hear these stories, because we've had, and I've said this like one other time on an episode, but we've had so many stories like that where people are out of it or whatever, and they have encounters with Heavenly Father or Jesus Christ. And the one thing that is in common is exactly what you said, is that you just felt this huge amount of love, like everything radiated love. And I love being able to like hear stories like that, because it just makes it that much more real that that's how it is. And that's how Christ is. And being able to like hear so many examples, yeah, they're a little different, but that is the same. And so I don't care if people call you crazy or you're on drugs or whatever, because every story that we hear like that is the same. And yeah, that's so cool. I mean, not cool that you had to be hurting, but so cool that you got that experience.
We've had a lot of trials in our 20 years of marriage, 23, whatever it is. Literally our house just caught fire a year and a half ago. We haven't even been in this remodeled house, not quite a year. But with each trial, there's a blessing. It was with each trial, we can look back and see not just one blessing, multiple blessings. Again, after our house burned down, it didn't burn down, but we couldn't be in it. And they basically had to take it down to the, what do you call it? The studs.
They totally gutted it. All of the sheetrock, flooring, insulation, wiring. It was just down to the bare frame.
And a friend of ours did a meal train, and we had meals for 2 months. I didn't need, because we were staying in a hunting camp.
The hunting lodge.
Right. We were able to go into a place that had enough bedrooms for all of our children. I didn't have to worry about feeding my family, trying to figure out groceries. For 2 months, we were taken care of. People donated things. Again, they did fundraisers, and our little tiny community has always come through.
Right.
Angels among us. We couldn't have got through that without our community and our families and people that I've never met. He might have taken hunting once or twice. They, you know, donated things, people. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to see.
People are awesome.
Yeah.
Well, they know that you guys are awesome and that you guys would do the same thing for them. So it's easy for people to want to help, because obviously you've made some kind of impact on them. So in one way or the other.
She has.
Yeah. He's the nice one.
You're the comic relief.
Yeah, I love hearing stories like that. And you mentioned it earlier in the story when you guys were able to adopt your three kids from Ukraine, that the community coming together and making it happen. And I love, don't get me wrong, I absolutely love being able to talk about angels on the other side of the veil and being around us and helping us. But I also love almost more hearing about God using us, his children, as angels and being able to come together to help people. And I just, the thought of me being an angel for somebody in moments like that. And on the flip side of that, the thought of, I'm sure there's been plenty of times where God has given me nudges to go and do and say or be an angel for somebody, and I haven't done it. And that, it weighs on me, but I also know that he has grace and that he still loves me, and that the next time that he asks me to do something and to be something for somebody, that I hope that I can be in tune with what he's needing and asking me to do more so. And hearing what other people have done for you guys and the countless other stories that we have gotten to hear and share on our show, it makes me want to do that more. And that's ultimately what we're trying to do, is he needs us, right? He can't send a heavenly angel every time somebody needs help. He needs us to go and do things for his other children. And I just hope and pray that I can do that, and that he can trust me enough to ask me to do that.
Right. Well, that's what we covenant to do at baptism, is to mourn with those in mourning and comfort those that stand in need of comfort, to testify of Jesus Christ and do as he would do. And what you just said, being an instrument in his hands to be mortal angels, to serve others and listen to that still small voice. Look for those that are in need and come to their aid when so prompted to do or so moved to do. We're all born with the light of Christ. Sometimes we don't always have to be told. We can see with our own eyes and say, hey. And it can be something just as simple as smiling to someone. We don't know what somebody's state of mind is or what kind of a day they've had. And just a simple smile can go so far.
I also wanted to touch earlier on one of the first stories that you guys shared, Heather, where you lost Carlisle. But the appointment where you walked out of that appointment, you were given peace. And Fonzie, for a long time, you thought that she was lacking faith, when really she had received a gift that almost allowed her to exercise her faith differently than she would have otherwise. And that happens so much in life too, where I think this person should be reacting or doing something different than what I perceive. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be acting like that person. I wouldn't be doing that. They're not exercising faith in the way that I think they should. And you didn't mean anything by it, Fonzie. You weren't, condemning your wife at all in it. It's just how we perceive things as individuals differently it's such a blessing, but at the same time, it's a curse. Like, we need to get out of that, where we are passing judgment on other people. We have no idea what they're going through or what kind of comfort they've received from the Holy Ghost or from God And so it's just, I just loved that even in a marriage, we can see things completely differently and almost pass a little bit of judgment on the people we love most.
I didn't know He didn't think I had faith, and I couldn't convey to him the peace that I felt because I didn't recognize it for years until I looked back, and it was years later that I realized that it was the Holy Spirit comforting me, but I didn't realize that. I just had a peace that I didn't even recognize as peace. I'm just like, okay, now I have this that I need. It kept me busy. I have a funeral to plan. I have all these things to put into place. And he never once said to me, I can't believe you don't have faith or anything. He just was silent for that many years. But looking back, he just thought, oh, I just didn't think she had the faith.
And she was in tune and I wasn't, right? I was trying to make my will become the Lord's will, and not looking at the big picture, seeing things from his, you know, his side. He is always looking eternally, right? And I wasn't. I was looking in the now, in the moment. And, you know, it was coming from a well-intentioned place, too. Who in the world would want their wife to have to bury a child, right? But she'd received that confirmation and that peace. And you know, that's the Savior's peace that he gives us that nothing else in the world can give us. That's his peace. And we know that we don't know why, but we do know that it will all be okay.
That's a good piece of advice right there. I don't know if, did you have anything else that you
wanted
to add? We usually, at the end of every episode, we like to ask you to share one thing that you know to be true. So we would love for both of you guys to share.
Just one. Right. I've been pondering this too, thinking, what will I say?
I know that Heavenly Father wants us to have joy. And I know that the power of prayer, any talk that I've ever given, any thought when I contemplate things, it all goes back to the power of prayer. Our prayers are answered, maybe not in the way that we want them to be. But even at 51 years old, I feel like things that I've prayed for as a child, he has answered.
And I think the thought that I've had, the impression that I've received when pondering this question is to build off of what she said, was that, you know, with the power of prayer, prayers are answered. I know that the heavens are opened. I know that our Father in heaven and our Savior Jesus Christ live, and they want us to have a relationship with them. They want us to turn to them in prayer and develop and grow that relationship with them. I know that to be true, and that our Father in heaven has sent us a Savior in his Son, our elder brother, Jesus Christ, to follow him back to our Father in heaven. I know that to be true.
Thank you both for sharing. I know there was other multiple stories that you could have shared and maybe thought about sharing, but I think you shared exactly what you were supposed to, and I'm grateful for your willingness to be here with us and to talk about some things that probably aren't super easy to talk about. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for hosting this podcast so people can know that the Lord is mindful of us and is active in our lives.
Yes.
I know that he is in my life, and I've said this before. I'm not special. I'm not any different than anybody listening to this. He loves you just as much as he loves me. And he loves me a lot. So, he loves you. Go look for his hand in your life. Go look for his angels.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us.
If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.